There's always a little magic dance goes on the last verse of a song in this part of the service, and as if by prestidigitation, the wonder of Karen changes to the amazement of Douglas. And we'd have a little dance together in the corner then, and here we are. I'm speaking downstairs, partially because of laziness, you know. Climb every mountain, ford every stream and all that. But also, I've noticed over the last 6 months, I can't read my writing that I put on the screen. So I'm just trying to get nearer to the screen up there so I can read what is on there. Because, you know, I've spent all of 5 minutes preparing this PowerPoint. And I'd like to be able to see the wonder of what it is. So, fruitfulness on the front line. Having said all that, do you actually record that rabbiting on? Do you? We've been thinking about fruitfulness on the front line, and these four themes initially. Having looked at the big picture in the first section, how God uses us through Jesus Christ, who is Lord of all things. Not just a few things, every area of our lives, not just spiritual areas of our lives, the whole of the human experience which he embraces with himself through his salvation. We went on to think about character and looking at how God uses who we are, where we are, to be his fruitfulness. Looking at work and seeing ourselves in the place of our volunteering, in the place of our servicing, in the place of our employment, doing what God does all the time. Looking at his creation and says, that is good. And that's what he wants us to know of our service for him. And I think last week we were looking at ministering grace and love in our experience. Those are all of a piece, in a sense, aren't they? You can't divide, and you shouldn't think of dividing up your Christian life into different bits and elements. They each connect in with each other. Certainly fruitfulness and character connects with grace and love, an expression of that, making good work, connecting with what God is doing in his lordship all the time. This week we're thinking about moulding your culture, and I'm indebted to somebody who asked me during the week, what is that? And what you're going to talk about. And it made me realise that the word culture is a bit of a slippery word, isn't it? What comes to your mind when you think of that word as it floats into your brain? You're not the first person to ask that question. This character has asked it as well. I try every now and again to get some reference to Simpsons into there. I think this character is a third level character. He only comes into the Simpsons every few programmes. But we love the Simpsons in our house. And he is it. I don't know his name even. So if you know his name, shout it out. Let's have some participation into this group, you know. I know the first and second level of Simpsons characters. But it just demonstrates, doesn't it, how disconnected I am. Or what a sad character I might not be. Yeah. So, often think of science when we use the word culture. The solution lab researchers use to develop bacteria. It's a scientific word, right? We often think of arts as well. The things we like to enjoy in our society and in our wider culture. You know, our music, films, concerts, from Benjamin Britten to Benefit Street is all part of, would you believe it, what we call culture. And also there's a kind of definition which is to do with how we analyse society. Social scientists, anthropologists and sociologists analyse the rituals we do, the customs we have, the things we do all the time and think deep thoughts about them. Everything you do in your society. From what's so-called introduction cultures to so-called civilised cultures. Sociologists are analysing that. The people who designed this series, called LICC, Mark Green, has a very popular definition of culture. It's so popular that I couldn't find it in my dictionary when I looked for it. But it simply says, culture is how we do things round here. It's kind of talking about the environment which we have wherever we are as a group of people. So families have cultures or environments of ways of doing things which make them unique to themselves. It's a very, very different thing coming into our house and experiencing our family culture to imagine going into David and Grace's family culture. You know, the house is a lot tidier for a start, you know, than our own. Somebody commented as I came into the house the other day for some lunch and said, that thing's not been moved for 5 days. I can't believe that. You see, we were practicing the hospitality that we are not known for. They are. Everybody has culture. Churches have culture. Can you believe this? They do. They have their own different ways of doing things. If you go into a Church of England, it's a very, very different feel from this thing you experience every week, which you think is normal. And if they came here, they'd think, oh, very odd people, these. That's because our beliefs affect and shape our behaviour at the heart of culture. Our beliefs affect and shape our behaviour. Not to use too many church examples, as we're trying to think about our culture in the wider sense and where we live and have our being. But I was taking a service for a church, East End Wesleyan Primitive Methodist Church in Coventry, to give them their full title. Oh, it's Nuneaton, is it? No wonder I missed that service. And they'd asked me to lead communion service, you see, and to take the service and lead the communion service. Now, here at Canley Community Church, we believe that communion is an expression of the centrality of our life as gospel people. So what we do when we break bread and share communion with each other, we try to make it physically in the centre of the heart of our service, you see. Not every church does that. Some churches have an approach where they take the communion at the end of their service. So they do the preaching bit, the singing bit, the communion bit. They give a notice so people are not sure whether they're saved in or out, up or down, can get out, and then they have their communion service. I'd forgotten to ask about this. So when I led communion in the service, I did literally that. And so I've had a hymn, had a chorus, had a praise, had a prayer. I simply encourage us to break bread together. It did confuse the deacons somewhat. It had them scurrying around, popping up and down, all kind of, it was all very bit disturbing to my usual style of being. Well, that illustrates, very powerful, that what we believe affects our behaviour. What you think is important and where you place it. It's a very silly example. Some families are very, 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 very physical, aren't they? If you come from a physical culture. Some families are very, very shocked by physicality. Mark Green on the DVD you'll see on Tuesday and Wednesday, his family are a mixture of different cultures. His father is Russian and Jewish. His mother comes from an Irish and Catholic background. What do they have in common with each other? Food and embrace. So their basic family culture is, if it moves, hug it. And if it moves further, feed it. So anybody comes into the house, they get a big hug, and then they get another one, and a bit of cake thrown down the throat as well, you know. Imagine if you're a reserved child, a teenager, coming into that kind of house if you visit with your friend, you know. You're dodging the hugs, aren't you? All the time. This is different kinds of environmental culture. And also where we work. Some cultures are very, very relaxed and some cultures are very, very disciplined. A military culture will be very, very disciplined and others will not. Some cultures allow bullying in their working environment and some in leadership allow it not at all. You see what we're saying here? Culture is the environment and we live in. And how we live affects and reflects what we are. We're going to do two things just in this time which we have in this sermon, which is a dying sermon. It will finish, all right? The first thing we'll do is look at what the Bible says about being moulded ourselves by God. Before we can mould other things, we must know ourselves to be moulded by God. And that is Romans chapter 12. The DVD series will look at the outworking of that in the house group. So I'm not going to do that too much because I don't want to simply repeat what they will do in there. Moulding our culture. So in a sense, I'm going to give the Bible bit, and then on Tuesday and Wednesdays, we're going to look at the application bit, as it were. And the Bible bit is simply, before we can mould, we must be moulded. Therefore, I urge you, brothers and sisters, in view of God's mercy, to offer your bodies as a living sacrifice. This is pleasing to God. And so do not be conformed to this pattern of the world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Then you will be able to prove what is God's will, his good and perfect will. You have highlighted there, hopefully, different key words. One is mercy, and that's what Paul was thinking about when he was writing this. He was very struck by the mercy of God. The other is be conformed by God, not be transformed by God, not conformed by this age or this world. And the other is being renewed in your mind. Let's think about this first idea, being conformed by the pattern of this age or by the pattern of this world. Now, I want to ask you what you think these have in common with each other. All right? Now, you've got to be quick. Right. Who are they? Wallace and Gromit. Superheroes. Wonderful characters in the pantheon of animation, I think. Right? Who is that for an older generation? Morph. He's Greek. That's a Greek word. Right? To be morphed means to be transformed, to be morphed. And to be metamorphed is a word in this passage. To be transformed. We're metamorphosed in our thinking. And I needed a fourth character. Again, he was in a very famous program called The Wrong Trousers. Was it The Wrong Trousers he was in? He was a gangster robber, brain robber, who thought that a rubber top would hide and disguise his penguin looks. Now, what have those four characters got in common? Pan? Their creator, yes, right. Yeah, well, yes, right, their creator. There's two sets of creators there. There's Nick Parks, and I can't think of the Morph's creator. I'm trying to think of his name. But Tony Hatch, that's right, yeah. I try to be cross-generational here, don't I, in everything. What's their other connection? Pauline, go to the top of the class. That's right. These are plasticine creatures. And for some of you, I need to tell you, they're not real. All right. They're amazing plasticine creatures, actually, in their ability of their makers to mould them. But I wonder if sometimes we are a bit like plasticine Christians, easily moulded by the environment in which we are living and have our time in, easily pressured into the shape of things. And that's what Paul says. He says, do not be moulded, conformed into the pattern of this age. He says, be careful about that. He says that very clearly. And the pattern of this age, he wants to say, is a word that means stamping out the same image and pattern on a coin again and again and again and again, simply becoming replicated according to this age's values and attitudes and your community's way of doing and being. Paul warns against that. Don't be stamped in the mould of this age. Now, I'm using that word because the NIV has a translation, this world. It doesn't simply mean the social environment you're in. It means actually the age which is passing away. Because the Apostle John goes on to say, this age is passing away. It's going to die out. So what we want you to do is to have your mind renewed, morphed, by the values of the age to come. the age that is with us. Somebody once said, be careful about marrying the spirit of the age, because you might well find yourself widowed in the next. Be worried about being married to the spirit of the age, because you may find yourself widowed in the next. And that's very, very good advice, because our culture is very fashionable. Things that were relevant to people in the 50 years ago are now considered completely wrong. And values that we hold today, which we wouldn't have held in our society thought in the 1950s, are completely appropriate. You know those values. They're exhibited again and again and again. Now, there is a sense in which the values of the 1950s, let's use that example, some of them were completely wrong and they needed to be revised. But the modern age has values that are completely unchristian and they need to be resisted. And the thing about that is that these values will change again in 30, 40 years' time. And when Jesus comes, will completely change completely. So Paul is saying, have your mind continually renewed by the values of a future creation, a future age, the values of God's kingdom, the values of his way of doing things. Now, I asked Karen to read a passage which was a bit before this, because it struck me as very, very exciting. Now, you know when you say, preachers say, this is exciting, it usually means it's exciting to them and to nobody else. But Paul ends this section of chapter 11 with a fantastic song of praise, doesn't he? He says, oh, the depths of the riches of the wisdom and the glory and the unsearchable judgments of God. Why does Paul burst out into this praise and then lead and say, therefore, do not be conformed to the image of this age? Because he'd been thinking. And that's what renewing your mind is. It's giving yourself to godly thought. And Paul had been working on the amazing issue of how when God had been using Israel in chapter 11 and then came to, because of their disobedience, saving non-Jews, Gentiles, what did that mean for Israel? He'd been thinking about it for months. In fact, he'd been thinking about it for three chapters. And he goes backwards and forwards and backwards and forwards. And then he realised something quite amazing, that God had used Israel's disobedience so that everybody could come to salvation. So everybody was to be received, those who trusted in the Saviour themselves. So God was no longer this God who was folding his arms to the kingdom of heaven and saying, you cannot come in. He was opening his arms to say, you shall come in, if you trust in the Saviour. And then out of that, receiving an offer to everybody, Israel could come back into that offer. Not as a unique people, not as a landed people, but as a saved people. And that's what led to this amazing praise. This is God, and he does amazing things. He works out to be this God. Who has ever given God that he should repay him? For to him and through him and for him are all things to be glory forever and ever. Therefore, I urge you as brothers, in view of God's mercy, what you're saying is God had shown mercy to the non-Jews. God is going to show mercy to Israel, and God is showing mercy to you. So this was a man who was overwhelmed by mercy, and his mind was being renewed by the mercy of God. And that's a good thing to do. Sit and think about a Bible thought for any length of time and you will be overwhelmed by it, overwhelmed by mercy. We don't do that very often in our culture. But this is what Paul did. And being overwhelmed by mercy, which became his belief statement, it reached out to other people. Belief shapes behaviour. And then he became a person who lived in mercy. He lived by mercy and he shared mercy with other people. Beliefs shape behaviour. So we have that, don't we? And that. Oh, I have to get rid of that character. Sorry about that. You've been looking at the wrong thing. These are the values of mercy. Let love be sincere. Hate what is evil. Cling to what is good. Be devoted to one another. Honour one another above yourselves. Never be lacking in zeal, But keep your spiritual favour. This is later on in Romans chapter 12. Serving the Lord, be joyful in hope, patient in affliction, faithful in prayer. Share with the Lord's people who are in need. Practice hospitality. These are all behaviour things which are governed by the principle of mercy. Governed by the principle of grace. Governed by the God who, instead of folding his arms, wants to embrace everyone through his Son, Jesus Christ. These are the values we're meant to live by in our working life, in our social life, in our family life. And we, by doing that, do make a big difference. There are some environments where people would just love to be away from this area. I'm not thinking about Canley Church. I'm thinking about maybe a working environment. It really is oppressive, mainly because somebody is not expressing proper human values. Maybe the leadership in that team or that organisation is not functioning very well. Maybe the tyranny of the wider pressures of society are just overwhelming that small community of people. Those are all in there. And then there is a light that seeks to be different. Then there is salt that seeks to be different. You know, when things are going really bad, Christians have a moral responsibility to live more like Jesus and be positive and joyful and gracious. Not in such a way that they pretend that something isn't happening and things aren't difficult, but in a way that is very firm, that is very sure and says, I will not be overwhelmed by this. And let's not be overwhelmed together. So we have those verses, don't we, in Matthew chapter 5, which you'll be thinking on in your house groups. You are the salt of the earth. But if salt loses its saltiness, how can it make it salty again? You are the light of the world. A town built on a hill cannot be hidden. This is not just you, it's communities. It's talking not just to the individual Jesus, it's talking to his people. So get together with Christians and have them involved in your society. But each of those are to do with how individuals live. I want to talk finally about Barry. Barry works for Severn Trent. He's been working for Severn Trent for some years now. It's a good organisation and he enjoys working with it. He's a Christian who works with Severn Trent. Severn Trent has a regional water authority every several years as reviews by the regulatory authority, Ofwat. Sounds nice, doesn't it? Let's say it together. All right now. Ofwat. Somebody else here works well at Severn Trent as well. Who is it? Ken, that's right. Ken MacDonald. Anyway, they've gone through a very extreme, difficult period because in order to prepare for the Ofwat regulation review, Severn Trent, like many water authorities, have been renewing their processes, looking at their processes and looking at their management structures and their team people within it and looking at their values, how they deliver clean environmental water to people. And they've decided to give everybody the opportunity to be interviewed for their job. It's one of those experiences. Some of you have been there, I can see by your smiles. Or were they grimaces? Anyway, so Barry is a team leader, as a manager of a group of people. He was up for his review 5 days before he was going on holiday. So he had that review and went through it. It was before his holiday, and he realised just before, a couple of days beforehand, that his team had never been through this process before. And they were going to really suffer at this process. So instead of going on his holiday, he spent his holiday week preparing his team for that review, helping them with the issues that they might face, the interview process, looking at how they might deal with those things. He made a Christian choice about how he was to be salt and light in that place. He was committed to wanting Jesus' values, not just for this age, but the age to come. How do the people of God and the people of God relate to people in this world where they live as if tomorrow was their future? With love, joy, peace, patience, goodness, kindness, gentleness, and self-control. Now, I'm a realist. I believe in the doctrine of the fall, and I still believe that you and I are still afflicted by it. We're not perfect. In fact, we're not even near perfect. We don't always live and behave like these values are meant to be. But we are called to that. And how can we live that way? Well, taking time to be renewed by the Jesus values, kingdom values, kingdom perspective. That means giving ourselves time to think, to pray, to love, to enjoy, and to live by these things. And mercy is a good place to start, which is where Paul started his thinking and ended up with this rapturous declaration of praise to God. Let's check whether I've got anything else on my notes before we finish. At the end of the sessions in the house groups this week, as we look at Matthew chapter 5, there's an opportunity to pray with each other for your environments, wherever you live out your life, your place of culture, whether it's in the neighbourhood. It can be anywhere, can it? I mean, a lot of my time spent leading Bible studies. I just love taking the Bible with people, you know. And there's a Bible study I take, and it's a regular one each week. And before long, we just start discussing drink and drugs. I have to say, it's not the Tuesday morning house group, that meeting here, over in the 70s and 80s. At that point, there's an opportunity for us to either be swamped by that culture or to be drawn back to the Jesus culture. So it's as simple and as small as that, isn't it? What we are moulded by in our conversational style. So there's an opportunity in the house groups that you pray together. But I'd like you to think more creatively about this. I'd like maybe that you in your house group look at each other and think, I'd like to meet with you in this coming week and for you tonight to talk about where I am, where I serve, where I live, in my culture. And I'd like you to pray with me for that. So do it in the house groups or become disciples of each other by doing it in your midweek life. Because that's what we're meant to be as Christians. We're meant to be people who are discipled by each other, discipled by Jesus, and discipled by his Spirit. A powerful motivation to live in the Christian life is the wonder of God to others. When we think of Jesus and his suffering for us, when I surveyed the wondrous cross on which the Prince of Glory died, my richest gain I count but loss, and pour contempt on all my pride. Worship is a profound motivator to living the Christian life. And we're going to sing that song now. It's number 596. But it's going to be the traditional version, so the song will be cheered by that. And we sing songs not to give ourselves mood. This isn't mood music. This is worship. And worship is meant to transform us. Paul says, doesn't he? He says, where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is freedom. And we, beholding the glory of his face, are transformed from one degree of glory to another. That's what worship is about, being transformed, which is where we're in Romans chapter 12. Let's stand and sing this powerful song together.